B-Pod Studios.
All right, coming up, we're going to get into that Spencer Howard debut yesterday. We got Flyers conversation on the table Wednesday against the Habitants of Montreal. That's going to happen. We're going to have that conversation. That's fun. And then, obviously, more Joel Embiid conversation. Anticipation to see how everything shakes out with JoJo and his left ankle. That's you ever done that? You ever, like, step on the back? Like, it used to be a stage wall. You know, if you played those gyms at a stage growing up when you were a kid, they had the stage under the gym.
Oh, yeah. I played in many gyms where you had to put your foot on the wall when you inbounded the ball.
Always, always hilarious.
Yeah,
it wasn't
Roman Catholic still might be like that.
Probably.
Yeah,
and then Joel Embiid basically just.
I thought you were going to ask me, did I ever turn an ankle? And I was going to say probably about 3,000 or 4,000 times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then
I don't know if it would ever made me miss 2 weeks of anything, but we'll see. See how it plays out. Never question a guy's injury was the first thing Phil Jasner told me when I started covering the Sixers beat. So I'm not questioning this injury.
Oh. But, where's the fun in that?
I would like to see him maybe come back earlier than expected.
I would go ahead and say it's safe to assume he's not playing until the playoffs actually start. I think we can all look at each other and go, that's probably what's going to happen there. Which is unfortunate because he needs to play. All these guys need to play. That'd be nice if he played.
I talk about habits all the time. Joel Embiid needs to get into the habit of learning how to play, into the habit of playing with some pain. Mm-hmm. He needs to get into the habit of running up and down the floor. He needs to get into the habit of not just grabbing a rebound and rolling the ball to a point guard like, oh, here you go, and then taking his first three steps and walking up the floor. He needs to make a habit of playing hard for 32 to 35 minutes every night. Every possession, every time. Expect perfection and fall a little bit short of it. I can live with that. But to not even try to reach perfection, I can't live.
Well, as I started the show with, not everybody could be Sean Couturier. Not everyone can be Sean Couturier, which just every single game is game seven in his mind. Whether it's, like I mentioned, a little poke check or just to get the puck free during a power play to set up a goal, a little play like that. Or it's literally diving on the ice during a penalty kill to try to get the puck down the other end to get it out of your zone. Like, that mentality. Like, when I know the cliche term, you know, Philly guy. Oh, is he a Philly guy? I feel like the people that we really talk about when that cliche term gets used is Sean Couturier. Every game's game seven no matter what. Chase Utley. Every game's game seven no matter what. Brian Dawkins. Every pass is the last second of the Super Bowl, right? Like that's how those guys play. When we talk about Philly guys, those are the attitudes of the players that we term quote unquote Philly guys.
Mm-hmm.
Joel Embiid, when it comes to that type of mentality, when it comes to every play matters, that he's not that guy. He needs to have some kind of fire lit under him. In order to get that, whether that's a self-motivating thing, whether that's a shush to the crowd, whether that's a coach that can light a fire under him, whether it's a player that's trash-talking him on the court, that's what he needs to light that fire. It's often not self-flipped, that switch, unfortunately. So we'll continue that conversation in a second, but I know one thing people were looking at over the weekend, it was the Phillies, and I don't know, you guys are more into this than I am. I've said many times when it comes to baseball, the emotion is just not there. Jake Arrieta comes out on Saturday. And actually, Mr. Tight Pants himself pitched pretty damn well.
Yes, his location in the two starts has been money. He's painting corners.
He's hitting his spots.
Yeah.
When he missed in his last warm-up game, I guess, he missed big. And those turned out to be some pretty big mistakes that were hammered out to Yankee Stadium seats. But six scoreless on Saturday. Jay Bruce comes up with a home run. JT Realmuto goes yard again, his fourth of the season. And things are looking up against those Braves. Then, unfortunately, you had the doubleheader, seven-inning doubleheader, come up yesterday. Vinny Velo, Vince Velasquez, and Spencer Howard. He makes his big league debut.
I was giddy yesterday.
I was ready. I couldn't wait. I was in front of the TV, and I just wanted to see, as someone like myself who is looking at this season like it's just a ramp up to next year, I want to see what you have from the young guys. I want to see what you have from Spencer Howard. Later in the year, I want to see what you have in a guy like Alec Boehm. That's what I want to see. But Vince Velasquez comes out in that game. And when I looked at the lineup card, something was off. And before Vince Velasquez ever threw a pitch, I'm looking at that lineup card. And I'm thinking, I understand you don't want JT Realmuto catching both games. But even that's questionable. But why not have Real Muto as your designated hitter in game one? Why would he not be your DH in game one?
Don't know.
I understand not catching, maybe, but not even your DH in the first game of the... No, that wasn't going to happen? Okay, Joe. I'll say this. In the early goings of this, Joe Girardi, and I'm not even one to really get on him for the bullpen because it's like, dude, pick your poison. Good luck with whatever you got. But when it comes to other managerial decisions, like who your designated hitter is going to be, and you know JT Realmuto is willing, ready, and able to be your DH in a day in the first game of a doubleheader where he knows he's going to catch the second game. So I know that's not the issue. JT wants to play. Why wouldn't you not have him just as your designated hitter in the first game? Any ideas? Any thoughts? Brainstorm? Open for interpretation? Okay, cool. I'm not crazy.
I wasn't a huge fan of the lineup he threw out in that first game at all anyway.
Yeah, but I think to me the most glaring thing was,
yeah,
wait, this is a simple decision to be made here. Like, it writes itself, basically.
Yeah, he's got to be in the lineup every day.
Joe, I don't want to say I'm doubting him, but I'm not thrilled with him so far.
See, here's
like Adam Haseley's clearly the everyday center fielder.
Uh huh.
Gosselin is a hot bat, and Segura stinks. Reese Hoskins is lost, and maybe you need to give him a couple days off because he's hurting this team. Scott Kingery stinks.
I don't think anything with Reese Hoskins is going to help at this point.
He's got to make some moves because Haseley deserves to be in that lineup. Gosselin deserves to be in that lineup right now over Segura and Kingery. McCutchen is struggling. Reese is struggling. Like, there needs to be some. Like, yesterday was a perfect day to give JT first. Or get Alec Bohm up here.
Or put him in the DH. Whatever.
Whatever.
Reese Hoskins, and I know we've thrown this solution out there a couple of times.
He's toast.
Reese Hoskins, I don't think, is a guy that's like, hey, give him a day or two off. Like, I don't think that's going to work for Reese.
I
don't think there's much saving Reese.
No, I think he needs just another offseason.
Gabe broke him.
Gabe has broke Reese Hoskins is basically what's
happened. I think he looks lost.
He had
a couple of hits yesterday in the second game.
Him and Roman Quinn don't look like they have any intention of swinging a bat up there.
Imagine this. Our stars, quote unquote. Imagine like two of our stars in Philadelphia are an all-star point guard who won't shoot and a first baseman who won't swing. Like,
yeah.
That's our reality right now in Philadelphia.
All right. To play devil's advocate here.
Oh,
to
be fair. I know. Here we go.
I know.
All right, here we go. What do you got? Better be good.
Game two, he went 2-for-2, and he looked like a monkey was just lifted off him. It was not a great single.
There
but
we go.
He almost cried when he got the first
base. Yeah, he made good contact, and then he came up and hit another one. So hopefully you feel like he will come out of this. And with Scott Kingery, I understand the frustration, but remember, he's coming off COVID. So he had no real training camp to get caught up on.
Right.
Anything. So he's kind of using this as a spring training.
All right, I'm just saying, give the guy a day off every once in a while.
I get you, but I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Okay.
Just trying to be fair.
No, Pat, now I feel better.
I don't. It's coming for me.
Now the decision to sit Realmuto is just dumb.
Okay, thank you very much.
No, that was idiotic.
All right, well, thank you.
All right, I'll go back.
Thank you, Pat. But no, make no mistake. When I talked about not really going after Girardi for bullpen decisions, the only thing I will go after him for bullpen decision is going to the bullpen at all.
Like, that's
Like, you believe me? Brought in Guerrero there? Yeah. I can. You know why? Because he stinks like everybody else in the bullpen. So who else was he going to go to?
The bullpen's ERA before yesterday was 8.10. Uh-huh. I would imagine it's higher.
yes. But like when you have a decision with, like, for instance, Zach Wheeler, or you have a decision like Nola in the other seven-inning doubleheader from, what was it, Friday or Thursday?
Thursday.
Don't go to the bullpen yet. You need one inning. And in those games, you needed, what, four arms to get through one inning?
Mm.
I was like, no thanks. So when I look at those things, that's where I'll look at Joe Girardi and say, you know what? I understand it's pick your poison when you go to the bullpen, but maybe wait a beat or two before you go to that bullpen. Maybe get the most you can from your starting pitchers.
Yeah, now with Howard, you have six starting pitchers. I mean, numbers-wise, I wouldn't say, you know, quality or anything like that.
Yeah, you look at the roster, there's six guys that have SP
six guys
next to their name.
Exactly. So, yeah, you got to stretch your innings. You know, hide that weakness as much as you can.
All right, so let's jump into this for a second here. Spencer Howard comes out, makes his big league debut, and, I mean, he looked like a guy that was making his big league debut, and that's not what you want to see from a big league debut.
You think John Middleton snuck his parents in the stadium?
I thought about that.
And said, don't show him on TV?
I thought about that. Because I was like, if I was a father.
Because I was thinking about that. I was like, that sucks. Your kid's making major league debut and nobody's They
said
in-house?
They said it during the broadcast that they were somewhere else.
California, and I read it in a story, too.
Okay.
That watching
that sucks.
Of course it does. But
Templeton, California, they were watching from, yeah.
So he goes out to the mound, and I saw a guy that looked like he was making his big league debut.
Yeah, because he looks like he's 13 years old.
Yeah, but also, like, body. Like, you talk about body language with the Sixers. I mean, you look at his face, and I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. Now, it wasn't a train wreck by any means. He gave up in his debut. He went 4 2/3, 7 hits, 4 earned runs, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts, 2 home runs in that game. Freddie Freeman and Ronald Acuna took him deep. But overall, what you look for in rookies all the time, whether it's their debut or their first time, whether it's preseason in football, you always just look for a guy who belongs. You look for a guy who's comfortable, and that's it. You don't want him to look like he's making his debut. That's what he looked like. So he didn't dazzle by any means. We knew about the 95-mile-per-hour fastball. It didn't have a lot of life on it yesterday, unfortunately. His breaking stuff looked like it had flattened a little bit. Some of his breaking pitches were hanging up also a little bit too much. Like, he didn't look crisp and sharp. And one of the things that I actually smiled a little bit over was his first major league strikeout. JT Realmuto had to remind him, hey, you're going to want that ball.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Yeah.
I just thought that was funny. But everything else, I'm hoping, okay, good. You know what? You got this under your belt, kid. Go get him next time. That's really all I got. He didn't overly impress. He wasn't great. He wasn't awful either, but he left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, he threw one of the pitches that he threw. It was a breaking ball, and it was nasty, and it was called a strike, and it was nasty. Tom McCarthy's reaction was, oh, like, he was thrilled with the pitch, so much so that I had to rewind it. And I'm like, wait, listen to this. Listen how excited Tom McCarthy is over his pitch. He showed some flashes. You're right. 95 on the corners was great. When the breaking balls weren't hanging, they looked good. It's a typical first outing. I had absolutely no problem with it. You know, and I called eyebrows up, you know. People that are scared and playing and they don't know what's up, like, their eyes are saucers. Their eyebrows are way up in the air. When you feel that confident and you feel like you belong, that's when your eyebrows go down and you're like, all right, I belong here. His eyebrows will go down soon because he does have nasty stuff. And, Jamie, you're right. I was just as excited as you yesterday. I couldn't wait for that game to get started for no other reason than watching Spencer Howard.
Yeah, lot to be desired. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a rookie's first start. You know, I hardly ever put a ton. All I look for is the get out pitch when I see a kid. Like, I want to see what you got when you got 2 strikes in a pitcher's count.
Sure.
And he's got it. I think this kid's going to be the real deal. I mean, he's exciting.
We knew going into it what he had.
But I hadn't seen it consistently against major league talent.
Sure.
I mean, because, you know, double A games and stuff like that. It's like, all right, I can only glean so much here.
Right.
When I saw him on the big stage, I went, all right, yeah, he's fooling major league hitters.
I am more excited. See, like, and I've said this before, most people, a lot of times, they're not excited about their first day on a job. What they're excited about is, like, a couple weeks into their job when they found a groove. No different here with an athlete. You look at a guy like Spencer Howard, I'm glad he got the first start out of the way. Now that's over, all right? Now you're a big league pitcher. Go make it happen in your next couple of starts here. Show me what we were so hyped about.
Sure.
Show me what Bryce Harper was so excited about to get into his rotation to help him win baseball games. That's it. I'm not writing the guy off. I'm not going bust or anything stupid or hot takey like that. It's just that when you see a guy make his debut, oftentimes you want to see him look a little bit better.
Yeah. I remember Cole Hamels' debut. It just jumped into my mind. I think it was against Cincinnati.
Yeah,
against Cincinnati.
The Reds.
Yeah.
Two runs.
Yeah, and it was like, whoa, this kid, that changeup was full. Like Jamie said, you want to see him fool major league hitters. And it was right off the bat with Cole Hamels. It was, wow, this is going to be fun.
Special.
And it was a homegrown pitcher, something you hadn't seen in a long time from the Phillies. So, yeah, was yesterday disappointing? I don't think you could ever label a first outing disappointing for a pitcher. Would you have liked seen better? But there was some nasty stuff there. And if he can curtail that, okay.
There's so many low bars in town.
Ain't that the truth?
Where, like, you just have to be better than ineptitude in a lot of cases. Like, in the Sixers cases, like, oh my God, Alec Burks looks amazing because he's better than Hollow freaking Neto. But, like, Spencer Howard, he's not, you can tell he's not one of our normal prospects. That's what I took from him.
He's not Vinny Velasquez.
He's real.
Yeah, he's got great stuff.
Yeah, he's real. Yeah. And that was very comforting yesterday.
And now we'll find out if not only does he have great stuff, but if he also has it between the ears.
Yeah, and I I mean, I'm just guessing here, but I would think he would. So I can't wait. For every start he has, I'm going to be just as excited for the remainder of the year.
And here's the other thing, and this is what I was going to get into a little bit more with Girardi. I feel like Joe Girardi, and this isn't a good thing at all, I feel like Joe Girardi is approaching this season similar to how I'm approaching this season, which is, hey, this is just a warm-up for next year, folks.
Somebody tweeted in, and it's kind of how I feel, too. He's like, Girardi is managing this like it's a 162-game season, and this is early April. Like, there doesn't seem to be that urgency there.
No. Why does he keep pulling guys after 80 pitches to go to a bullpen that's basically is the equivalent of me and you?
Well, because it's the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, they're not stretched out, I guess.
Yeah.
Spencer Howard was stretched out. He was at the Lehigh Valley facility. He was still working. He didn't take off for COVID. So, you
well, I think that pull was because he wasn't effective. You're still trying to win a game.
You struck a guy out, and you're losing. So, I mean, he could have went six innings. And you could have given your bullpen a rest. I mean, when he went and got him, I threw my hands up like, you've got to be again. We're pulling pitchers early again.
My biggest knock on Joe Girardi, I'll say it again, isn't that who he uses out of the bullpen. It's when he uses the bullpen at all. And like, again, it's, I can't say it enough. It's a pick your poison bullpen.
Sure.
Like, well, all right, which one's
literally, it's all poison. It just depends on which one you're picking.
I know I'm going to get hurt here. Who's going to hurt me the least?
Yeah.
Maybe. That's what Joe Girardi has to choose from. If you can have an opportunity to use your stuff, especially when it's a 7-inning game.
Yeah.
The hell, man. I'll go back to the
I still love these 7-inning games.
I don't care.
I love it.
All right. Sure.
Do you really?
Yeah. It saves me an hour of my life.
Oh, yeah, I thought you meant I look at it at the strategy. Strategy in baseball usually kicks in.
No, I like how it's a different strategy.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Especially with a franchise with a direct bullpen.
Yeah, it's a strategy of like, maybe we can keep our starter in longer to avoid Austin Davis, whose nickname might as well be Ricin, because as you said, he's a poison.
That's pretty good, Christ. Pat. Pat's upset.
It's like, I mean, how many years, Austin Davis, like, how many years are we going to do? It's the Vincent Velasquez of relief pitchers.
You know what's funny? Yesterday was a seven-inning game. Game two was 2.5 hours still.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, but think about that.
It felt like five.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, anyway, that's a conversation.
That's what baseball should be. Come on.
7 innings?
Well, 2.5.
No,
3 hours max.
Hire efficiency experts.
I think it should be five innings.
Throw out all the BS.
When you get to a four and a half hour game, that's where I want to waterboard myself.
So anyway, we tell all you this to say, go Flyers. how do you like this? Carter Hart loved Carey. I think it's well documented. Even a casual hockey fan knows how much he loved Carey Price. And now Carter Hart, once again, is going to be, now this time in a playoff atmosphere.
It's real now.
Carter Hart's going to be staring down the other end of the ice against like his boyhood idol.
Cool.
Like, first off, Carter Hart is 12 years old. All right.
I was going to say, how old is Carey Price? Yeah, he's not that old.
No, he's not. But
he's 32.
I was going to say 31.
I was going to guess like 33. But you look down the ice and that's your guy. But I know we're going to make a big thing of the goaltenders, and rightfully so, because that's the most important thing in playoff hockey. But you think about this Flyers team, it's like, where's the weakness?
Well, the defense makes life a lot easier for old Arcata Hot.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, though. Like, even in breakaway situations like you had against the Lightning, shots after the first period were like crazy. They were like 20-6 or something like that. But when you look at what he does on the breakaways, everything happens in slow-mo for this team. Like, even when the defense gets beat, he's right there like, hey, man, I got it. Like, you guys have bailed me out a couple of times here. I got you. Like, I'm right here for you. But then, like, you just look at through the forwards, through the defense. Like, where's the person you're putting on the ice and you're going, oh, God, here we go again. Like, who's the Matt Carl on this team? You know what I mean? Like, who's the guy you're looking at going, oh, I'm just waiting for this guy to blow it? Who is that guy? Like, Radko Gudas.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Gudas. Yeah, and he had a bad turnover the other day.
Yes, he did.
And you're just like, thank God that crap has been moved out of here.
Uh-huh.
And you don't have that anymore.
Exactly.
You know, the kid Myers was the defenseman Myers, Philip Myers, was a guy I was watching at the beginning of the year saying, wow, does this kid really belong? Because he had some turnovers and he took some chances that I didn't really care for. But because of the mentality of this Flyers team is better, 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 he's gotten that. Mm-hmm. He's gotten better. It's a situation where they are such a good team right now that everything moving forward is getting better. It's a mentality thing. Sixers are the exact opposite, where everything in their minds, always is going to fall apart. That's what I was talking about, like the home and away record. It's a mentality thing. The Flyers' mentality right now is win-win, everything's good, and it shows. Sixers are the exact opposite.
Yeah, I don't know who the guy is that's going to be the goofball.
I don't think there's one.
And
you know why there's not? And every time we talk to a hockey expert about what's the biggest difference in this hockey team, what's the difference with Alain Vigneault? What does he bring? Accountability.
Everybody says it.
Every single person to a man talks about accountability. When Claude Giroux was on with us last week, accountability.
Also we asked Coatsy on Friday. Coach, accountability.
Same thing. And when we even talked to the head coach, he prides himself on calling people on their BS. And like, tell me as a player, we talked about that Philly guy, you know, cliche, right? What's every player that plays here, our number one requirement is give us everything you got.
Yeah.
Give us what you got. Every game's game 7. Give us all you got. Our number one attribute for a coach is accountability. Hold these guys. Don't make excuses for them. Like, look at Andy Reid, the winningest coach in this team's history. Didn't hold players accountable. People still hate him to this day, including Mike and KOP, who's on the line right now. We got open lines after that. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. When we come back, we'll get more into the Brett Brown discussion and what all these injuries mean. And I did mention, Bob, that it was Lil Toots' birthday.
Yeah.
First birthday, Lil Toots. Our second show, baby. She got a lot of presents.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, my wife spoiled her. Well, I guess I have to take credit for that as well. And then, you know, her grandparents spoiled her, as you would assume. And my wife ventured into the avenue of our life together that is my avenue. All right? We all have our special gifts.
Okay.
My wife plans, and I do. I execute.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, you have to have that balance.
All right?
Yes.
All right. I put things together or build things. Physically, okay. In our relationship.
Like you are man.
A child's toy.
I am the man of the family.
My family. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I build things. I put things together that my wife doesn't. But yesterday she ventured into the toy putting together process.
Yeah.
And let me just say, a wasted hour of my life later, it was done. Properly. We'll get to that when we come back here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
It is. Is Donna handy, Bob? Is she handy? Can she put things together?
When she has a couple drinks in her, she gets handsy.
Yeah.
Oh, handy?
Well, Bob,
I'm sorry.
You have 17 children, Bob. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Handy? yeah, more so than I am.
More so? Really?
She really is.
Oh, wait, hold on.
Jamie
and I were going to come over and put your grill together.
I got something to do that.
Never mind. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Like,
you're the guy that pays the installation fee, right?
That's what
Or installation, the assembly fee.
Yeah. It's part of the cost.
I look at that. How the hell with that? I don't need to spend $200. I'll put that together.
Yeah, no. I tried that for so many years, and like, it just never worked out well. See, I call people.
My dad, any honorable son, always wants to be, they want to have a proud father, right? You want your dad to be proud of you. My stupid way of
doing
it.
Can you tell my kids that, please? But go ahead.
But like, my dad built houses at one point in his life with my Uncle John, right? I can put together something from IKEA. Like, that's my equivalent in my world, right? So like, if I can't assemble something, my dad would just be like, oh my God, I raised an idiot. Like, that's how, I feel like.
So that's why you've gotten better at it.
That's why I would even say I excel at it. All right.
See, my dad, when something needed to be fixed, he would drop a phone book at my feet and say, there you go.
Yeah, but look, you became a writer, a great writer for that. All right? I can assemble something.
All right.
My wife ventured into that avenue, my avenue, and we'll talk about that in a second. But we got into this a lot earlier in the show, and it really is the most pressing thing right now in Philadelphia. And that is what's going on right now in terms of worry and in terms of critique. Like, right now, I think we all look at the Flyers and we're like, they got this. Like, they can, like, let me know when they're in the finals, baby. They're going to take care of business. Oh, whoa. Don't give me that look. You just cringed a little.
No, I didn't. No.
You just went,
no, I didn't.
You gave me a look to translate it to radio. The look was, That was the look.
Yeah, I get nervous doing that, saying, yeah, it's a given.
Oh,
I do. Look, Philly.
11 to 3.
I'm from Philly, Mark.
You're a Philly guy. You went 11 to 3 this whole time?
Yeah. No, I look.
Have they skipped a beat, buddy?
No. I have. But
then audibilize your look. That was what you just gave me.
It was, don't say that it's a given.
I don't believe in jinxes, Bobby. I don't believe in jinxes. Not going to happen. All right?
All right.
I think most people are looking at this Flyers team like, oh, thank God we have the Flyers. I think that's the attitude.
Oh, absolutely.
Meaning they won't disappoint.
Hey, I said an hour ago, by far, the best team in this city right now.
Damn right.
Yeah.
All right, so you're looking at that Flyers team, and you have the excitement, you have the Flyered up, right?
And you know what's great about it, real quick, Mark?
Please.
You brought up the captain earlier, who you guys had on last week when I was on vacation. Great interview. You know who my favorite Flyer is, Travis Konecny. Yes. Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, we talked about
Jake
that.
Jake Voracek is out with some kind of something going on, whatever. I'm not saying you don't need those guys, but you haven't heard a lot from those guys in this comeback. You know, the major guys that you thought of, Giroux, Konecny, Jake Voracek, they've played great.
Lots.
But you don't need, like, their scoring the way you did in the past. You don't need them to carry you at all. To the point of, all right, Giroux played a game the other night. Yeah, he played well. But that's it. And that's how good they are right now. That's how deep they are right now.
Lots.
Lots has been terrific.
Kevin Hayes has been good.
Right? I mean, Konecny did throw an unbelievable pass to Lots last week.
The
oh
slam
my
dunk.
God.
That was the Gudas turnover, Racco Gudas.
That's right, yeah.
Against the Capitals. And then you've obviously seen Carter Hart play great. I mean, these guys have just had...
Brian Elliott played great in this one game.
Exactly. Like, it's been nothing but impressive. That's been what's so great. But I think people look at the Flyers right now and go, oh, thank God for them. And then they look at the Sixers. And I get that more people are emotionally invested in the Sixers than they are the Flyers. And whether you want to make a positive or negative out of that, that's on you.
I need a break from them.
I honestly feel like I'm in the situation where we are more of the strict father than we have ever been. Like, this is like maybe Eagles, Andy Reid territory, strict father type of thing. Like, all right, go to your room. I don't want to see you for a little bit here, right? That's how I feel about the Sixers right now.
Yeah, whether it's not so much them, it's me. I need a break.
Well, no, it's because of that. It's, you know what? It's what you guys are doing right now is just so frustrating. I think you need to spend some time and work on you. Maybe that's the phrase that comes to mind when it comes to the Sixers. Because whether it's coaching, which makes you want to bat your head against the wall, or it's injuries, which just make you go, well, the sports god hate us. This is why we are where we are. It's just all frustrating. And to see Alec Burks, he had like 5 points in the fourth quarter, but his impact was greater than that throughout the game, Alec Burks, against the Trailblazers yesterday. And you look at a guy like that, and you think the athleticism, the awareness he has on the court, the ability to create, which is not something really many people have on this team at all. And you think, wow, this guy, we know he has to look up to Shake Milton. We knew for a minute there he had to look up to Howell Neto. And if that's not a best example, the best example of lackluster coaching, then I don't know what is. To think about something so obvious, and think about this for a second. This wasn't some guy that was playing in the G League for you that you were trying to groom. You weren't sure whether or not he was going to develop into the player that you needed him to be. No. This was a player your GM went out and traded for to get you off the bench scoring help for a postseason run. Him and Glenn Robinson III. And you instead looked at him like he was some throwaway in a deal. Like some throw-in to get Glenn Robinson. And that's not at all what Alec Burks was. Like he started like, what, 16 games when he was playing for the Warriors earlier in the year. But he was a guy come off the bench. He could start for you, come off the bench for you. He could be a combo guard for you. He'd be a scoring threat for you. He'd shoot from the outside, be a three-point threat for you. And it was like, nah, I'm good. Like, first off, to go, how will that over him? Let me think. And to now think, Shake Milton or him? It's like, it's mind-numbing to think about it.
I think we all had the conversation. As soon as the trade was made, you went, okay, yeah, he's in my playoff rotation. Glenn Robinson III's in my playoff rotation. Meaning your top 8 or 9 guys. Right away, as soon as the trade was made, were they game changers? No, not really, but they were good enough to be in your rotation. And for some reason, after 4 months off and analyzing everything, you came back and didn't have them a part of the rotation? Like, what?
It's just unbelievable.
What's the disconnect? It's so basically obvious that it's like, huh?
So they make a huge announcement. Ben Simmons is going to the floor and Shake Milton is starting. Seriously, looking at these 5 games that they've played so far, what's changed?
Other than injuries, nothing.
Like nothing
has changed.
Style
got
play
worse.
Hasn't changed.
That changed.
Maybe Ben Simmons, the ball was taken out of his hands a little bit more, which probably isn't a good thing, but I don't see his play has changed dramatically.
Oh, I thought
it got
worse.
Hurt.
He disappeared. He didn't know what he was really doing.
He came back and took a couple of threes in the first game. Basically said, "This is what you guys were talking about. Whatever."
And that was an exhibition game.
Yes,
I mean we keep going back to that game, but that was an exhibition.
It
didn't even count.
No, I am just dumbfounded that we're still in the audition period with this team. After 65 regular season games, after 4 months off, after 10 to 12 practices before the restart, after 5 games, and you're still auditioning as to who was going where. And it's not because of injury. The Alec Burks thing, that should have been first and foremost when you came back from this. Howell Neto, no. Sorry, you're at the end of the bench. Alec Burks, well, if the audition was anything, and we talked about it, it's Thybul, it's Korkmaz, it's Burks, it's Robinson. Who's going to be your rotation off the back? That was the only little thing that you should have been auditioning. Instead, you put that on the back burner for the first 3 games because Howell freaking Neto had to be in the game.
Nice usage.
Thank you. I learned from the best.
The term that came to mind, and I said this right after the first game, Ben Simmons was neutered. Like, taking the ball out of his hands, he looked like he was neutered. Like, his best play is full speed ahead, running the court, getting the instant push off a rebound. And it looked like, up until the injury occurred, it looked like that's what they were trying to do against the Wizards. It looked like they were trying to, okay, Ben, you get the rebound, instant push. Made basket, shake, you bring it up. But that's the type of flow that would work in this offense. And that's the type of flow I thought would work when we were talking about during shutdown. Well, is Shake going to make his way into the starting rotation here? Or is he going to be a starter in this on this team right now? Because he's a great guy to have for Ben to pass to, where he can shoot and he can make the outside shot. He can also create his own shot a little bit, so you can give him that. He'll play defense for you. You know that. Is that the type of offense you're going to run? And it turned out to be an about-face. It was like, hey, Ben, go down to the four and you disappear for a minute. Shake, try to make a play for us. Like, of the guy that's going to make the play, who is it going to be, Ben Simmons or Shake Milton? I mean, come on. It's not even a question. But apparently it was a question. And then you also look at these other guys, like, well, Alec Burks. You also, Glenn Robinson III's been hurt.
Yeah, I was going to see him back yesterday.
Yes, it was.
They almost went to Ben that move out of desperation because they have nobody that can create from the outside. Mm. It was like, all right, how much longer can we bash our head against the walls here? And then it was like, all right, we're so desperate. Look, Shake Milton can at least create. Mm. Let's try this. And then it's just a disaster. Whatever they do is a disaster.
In what different way was Ben Simmons used offensively that he wasn't used before?
He wasn't controlling the ball.
Yeah, but I mean, like, in a positive, because we talked okay, can you imagine him coming off of a weak side pick and running at the basket
or
a high pick and roll, like him setting picks, pick and rolls, whatever it may be. All right, in this four, we're going to see him run a wing. Can you imagine? Brett Brown said it. He's a deer. He gets out there. He can run. And if the ball's not in his hands, man, imagine that. Him running a lane, getting a ball, and go. Did we see that at all?
No. The only time you saw any type of impact was a play that didn't count, because I believe there was a travel. It was Shake Milton to Ben Simmons, who was on the elbow, who gave a no-look pass to Joel Embiid, who was running the baseline.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, what, huh? Did they just run a – was that a play? Did they just run a play?
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, let's see where this goes. And it hit right into a wall.
Portland did this a couple times last night where they ran a play where the second pass was what the play was about.
Mm.
Okay, so follow me. Like, I have the ball. I pass. The goal is to get the ball to Jamie for a basket. I pass to Mark. Mark finds Jamie. Boom, basket. Portland did that numerous times. You watch the Sixers. Rarely are there plays off of a second pass for a play. It's one pass, go. One pass, that's the play. One pass, that's it. One pick and roll, if I pass it, that guy's going to shoot. There's never, I've been calling it for forever. Like, there's never a pass, pass, boom, layup. Mm-hmm. Or a pass, pass, boom, wide open jump shot. You rarely see it out of a play. Does it come out of necessity sometimes? Like, a guy lines up to shoot a three and somebody jumps at him. Pass. Oh, I don't have it either. Pass. I'll shoot. Yeah, but you never see that two-pass play from them that works. No, and it's... that's fundamentals and schematic that just aren't there.
Ball movement is atrocious on this team, and I thought it might get better just as a shot without Ben. It looked very similar. It didn't look like any of the schematics were different.
It's bad high picks and roll-offs, and nobody moves, and three and four guys standing, and one guy trying to create, which they don't have creators except for maybe a couple of guys. Mm-hmm. And then it's passed to, out of necessity, and shoot an open three. Out of necessity.
Out of panic is what it looks like more than anything.
And it's just, if three-pointers don't bail them out more times than not, this team is... they're in deep, deep, deep trouble.
All right. Al Horford's been one of your best three-point shooters since the startup. Really what it comes down to, though, is, and we can talk about the schematics of it, we can talk about the X's and O's of it a lot, and we will, and we certainly are going to, but ultimately, without Ben Simmons, without possibly Joel Embiid for probably the rest of the eight-game startup, right, you're going to have this team underachieve again. And it's going to be a matter of whether or not injuries, especially one to Ben Simmons, which for all intents and purposes looks like he's done for the year, whatever is left of the year, will it ultimately save Brett Brown's job? And we talked about this last week with Ben Simmons' injury, and now Joel Embiid's injury is lingering. We want to see the severity of it. I would assume it's not serious to the point where he's going to miss playoff time. I would assume that it... just the fact that it happened means he's not going to play for the remainder of the AK1. They got three games left. He ain't going to play for those three games. But when it comes to playoff time, they're not going to win anything without Ben Simmons. It's not just going to be Joel Embiid playing inside-outside game this whole time. I don't see them making it out of the first round now. So will it be enough to blame injury, to reset Brett, or give Brett Brown another year as being the head coach, and compile that, add that to the idea that they're not going to pay two coaches for 1 year of service here in Brett Brown and whoever they bring in next. So will this be enough to save the man's job? I, in no way, shape, or form, think it should. If I'm the Sixers, when this is all said and done, I'm moving on from Brett, giving those responsibilities to somebody else, and letting them, you know, take a shot at putting this team together better, organizing the talent on this team better. But it's going to be a question mark as long as you're being run by money. And what isn't run by money nowadays, as we all know, what are you going to do as an ownership group? What are you going to do as a general manager, Elton Brand, with a coach that hasn't really put together the pieces that you got him? So I ask you, what do you predict the Sixers do, Bob Cooney, when it comes to Brett Brown? Is this enough to save his job because of injury, or enough to save his job because of money? What do you predict the Sixers do?
I think the only way Brett Brown keeps his job is if they win two rounds in the playoffs.
Okay. All right. So
yeah, I really do. I don't think this injury and money come into play. No. I think Brett Brown is coaching for his life here. Yes. Simply because we haven't seen any change. We have not seen anything different, in my opinion, since this restart began. So, injury, no, that's not going to save him. Money, I don't think, is going to save him. The only thing that can save him is what he does on the floor with this team.
All right, let's get to our, this is depressing. Let's get our spirits uplifted with our friend Mike in KOP. What's up, Mike?
Hey, you know, I'm a bastion of positivity.
My friend.
I'm here to brighten your day. I do like that I was able to rebuttal your Kramer gif with my own Kramer gif.
It was a good Kramer gif.
I do like that. This weekend was pretty good.
But you do, I admit, you live in a dark place.
I do. It's fine.
It's fine in your dark place. All right.
I enjoy it.
All right.
anyway, I did want to, ask, Bob, and this is a serious question, the way the Sixers are constituted right now, do you think that this was just poorly put together and this team has constituted? Because if we really think about it, they've kind of spent all the money they had to spend. They've used all the draft capital that they amassed. This team is the team. Even going forward, you build a team without really good guard play, and you thought you were going to bully them, and you built this team that's kind of different, to antithetical to every other team that's built out there through guard play. And I mean, what's your opinion? Do you think as constituted this team can really win, or are you going to have to break it up and try to get max value for the stars you have to try and build it the way that this league's actually going?
Yeah, I'm, and Mike, you've probably heard me say this before. I'm not a proponent of pieces have to fit and, oh my God, you need this because you have that. And he doesn't do exactly this, but he does. look, you go to a gym and you have 10 guys, you're going to pick the five best guys on your team, right? And you're going to make somehow, you're going to make it work. You're not going to look at that guy and say, wow, he's better than everybody else. But you know what? He doesn't fit really well with this. No, they have enough talent and they should be able to fit this together to be a dominant team in this Eastern Division. The fact that they're a sixth seed in the Eastern Conference is ridiculous to me. It's the way they're constituted says to me, and I said this before the restart started, you put every starting five in the NBA on the floor and you want to pick one of the most talented, it's going to be the 76ers. Why this coaching staff hasn't been able to make it work is beyond me.
Well, all right, so then let me ask, is it like a mixture of immaturity from the players and just not knowing what the coaching staff not knowing what they're doing that's coming to this? Because there's got to be some sort of answer, and how do you solve it? Because obviously, Ben still doesn't want to shoot. And, geez, with Joel out for 2 weeks, he's probably going to gain, like, 45 pounds and be out of shape. Like,
all right. Come on.
You know that's true, though. The guy misses a game, and he gets, like, he's totally
out of shape. Here's one thing, though. Has him being in shape been a problem since the restart?
Well, no, but that's because he's been playing. But sit him for 2 weeks, and he's got nothing
to do. He sat for 4 months!
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't trust Joel Embiid.
I have more of a question with the motor, and thanks for the call, Mike. I appreciate it. All right. So this wouldn't be a problem in your household, Bob, because you Donna will handle the other stuff. You don't really put things together. My wife tried to put together a scooter.
Uh-oh. whoa, a scooter?
How many pieces
She's
are there
to
a scooter?
She's only
1 year
old.
Skylar scoots around.
Let's see. There was the body of the scooter. There was the seat. There's a handle, and there was three wheels.
Okay, so not a lot.
So two of the wheels came already attached.
Okay, so with each other, yeah.
Yeah, so they're like four pieces.
On an axle type of thing. But then the wheels fell off.
Toots found a way.
Yeah, we're talking about toys, not Sixers. Hey-o, I'm sorry.
She found a way to mess this up.
Hmm.
An hour of my life later. And now here's I'm watching the Phillies while it was her, my mother-in-law, and her cousin, right, trying to put this stuff together. Her cousin Sarah, who's a sweetheart. And I said, guys, at the end of this game, and I heard them read the instructions and not understanding things. And I go, guys, at the end of this game, I got you. Just put that over there and I'll take care of this, right? Because I already know where we're headed. They're still struggling.
Mm-hmm.
It got to the point, Bob, where I was like, forget about the end of this inning. I was like, let me watch one more batter, or the end of this game. I said, let me watch one more batter, and then I'll be happy to go over there. It's like the fourth inning. I'll be happy to go over there. I'll take care of it. They put the handlebars on backwards. So that, let's just say that's all you need to know. Yeah. And it's one of those pop locks. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And they installed it backwards, which meant that if you install it improperly, and they did two things wrong, so it compounded it. I literally had to take this thing apart that was not meant to be taken apart with these little screws and these little plastic fixtures and put it back together. An hour of my life wasted because my wife was like, oh, I can do this. Put it together with the engineering thing.
Silly woman.
not even that. It's not what my wife's strong suit is, right? And I said to her at the end of it, she goes, are you mad? I go, no, I'm not mad. I said, but babe, I said, what do you do well? She goes, plan things. I go, all right. What do I not do well? She goes, plan things. I go, yeah, that's why you handle that. I go, when we put things together, whose job is that in the house? She goes, that's yours. I go, thank you very much.
That's
all I got to say.
In my marriage, I'm Celeste.
The tip, the cliche central casting woman.
I can't put anything together.
What's so hard?
It's not that it's hard. Here's the two obstacles for me.
Okay.
Impatience.
Uh-huh.
And lack of tools. I just don't have a good tool set.
You don't have a good tool set?
No, that's where I judge.
I will pass judgment.
Yeah. I can't believe I'm saying this, Bob, but I think we're basically the same guy.
We are. The more we work together, Pat, besides the height differential, we're pretty much the same person.
Enemies becoming friends?
I just said we're kind of similar.
I feel like it starts with respect. First comes respect, then comes friendship.
Oh, well, there's no respect.
I respect you. I feel a little bad that you don't respect me, but whatever.
It's a one-way street.
I just feel like we just had a family. I think we had one of those things called?
Dr. Phil moment?
No.
Son, you really awkward right
you
now.
You got to put your bootstraps up, son.
No, you don't put your hand in a blender. That's what I remember.
Bob is trying to be friends with you, Pat. What don't you understand?
We all have our strengths, is what I told my wife. So I looked right at Toots.
That's the message.
I said, you can plan a great birthday thing for little Toots, right? I said, I'll put the toys together.
It's funny you say that because every time I mess something up, I say, I got a lot going on for me. That's my go-to.
610-632-0975. I'd entertain people's, I just need examples here to roll out to my lovely wife. Has your wife ever tried to put something, or maybe your husband, Bob, in your case, your husband put out, maybe Donna's like, Bob tried to put this one thing together one time, didn't work out too well. Like, I just need train wrecks. That's what I need to know.
Well, now it's kind of the point that if I do try to do something, she hovers.
Oh, no.
And I that really gets on my nerves. That's another reason I don't put stuff together. Yeah. Because she hovers to make sure I'm doing it right.
That sounds terrible.
It is.
610-632-0975. We come back. In the next segment, we'll also hear from Draymond Green again. Find the lie in what he said about Joel Embiid over the weekend. Time of the Fanatic is 7:55. And, Window Nation, they're excited August is here because it's their anniversary and it helps celebrate. They're giving you 50% off all style windows. And this year, it's extra special for Window Nation because they just installed their 1 millionth window. Why does it matter? Well, because experience matters, especially in the window industry. And Window Nation literally installed, little installs the equivalent of a new window every minute. Each install leader averages over 16 years of experience too, ensuring that they get it right the first time. Price also matters, and because of their tremendous buying power, backed by over 1 million installed windows, means you always get the best value. Window Nation installs 50 times more than the average window company. In fact, help Window Nation right now celebrate their anniversary by giving you 50% off all style windows plus the deferred payments for 2 full years with no interest. Call now for a free estimate or see them online at windownation.com and see why over 100,000 homeowners choose Window Nation. Winter will be here before you know it, so protect your home and save big. 50% off all style windows, deferring payments for 2 full years. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.